Very good. So we can start the talk now. As I was mentioning last night, just a general introduction, this is learning how to relax our body and learn how to bring comfort to our body. And when we bring comfort to our body, you find your body is much easier to live with. You get some delight and happiness. And don't be afraid of the delight and happiness which comes from letting go. You can't be attached to the results of letting go. It's what we call the oxymoron, you know, like crazy wisdom. It's either crazy or it's wise, it can't be both. And it's like letting go and being attached, again, that is, again, crazy wisdom, it's an oxymoron. And anyway, one of the stories which I remember answered a lot of questions many, many years ago. And that was why it is when there's a very windy night, why is it that you never see the birds falling from the trees? Because I know that even these days, I saw a little article about the more people die in Western Australia, actually in Australia, more people die from like shark bites, being by sharks and bushfires, and even more people die from falling out of bed in the morning than having shark bites by sharks. It's amazing, just, I never realized just how dangerous it is to sleep in high and luxurious beds. You could fall out of them. Weird stuff. But anyway, that, why is that? It's because when you're sleeping, you're just, you know, not sure what you're doing. You can roll this way, roll that way. It's one of the reasons why monks and nuns, we like sleeping on the floor. You can roll this way and roll that way, and you never fall off. You never, ever get up on the wrong side of the bed in the morning, because there is no wrong side of the bed. But when it gets to birds roosting in the trees at night, that they haven't got much to cling on to, but nevertheless they can have a really good night's sleep, really relax and let go, and they never fall off. In fact, the more they let go, the more stable they are on the twigs or on the branches. And it was explained to me, actually a little bird told me this story, now he's an ornithologist. They say the bird's claws, when they sit on a, or they perch on a tree, that the more they relax, the more the claws close up. More letting go, and the more they close up. Because the default state for a bird's claws is to be closed. The more they relax and let go, the more stable and safe they are. And in the morning, it takes a lot of effort to actually to open the claws so they can fly off. But the more they relax, the more stable and safe they are. So, that is just like when we meditate, the more we let go, the more stable we are. We don't tend to fall off our meditation object. We don't can have a nice, relaxing meditation. The more effort, the more you try to cling on, the more you will fall off. Just like the other similar story, when I was a kid, I got a bicycle. I don't know how long I had to save up for that one. I was about 10 or 11. And I was so scared of falling off. So what happened when you were scared of falling off? You grabbed the handlebars of your bicycle till your knuckles went white and you were so stiff, you kept falling off. And when I relaxed and didn't really worry about falling off, he never fell off. Because when you relax, your body adapts to going around the curves or the bumps or whatever. When you're very stiff, that's when you have the accidents. So that taught me a lot about how to let go and how letting go becomes a key to this meditation path. But it is so hard for people to understand what letting go is. Many times people don't question Tom, yeah, I know I'm supposed to let go, but how do I let go? Just let go. But what do you mean? I've got to do something to let go. Come on, no, I don't do anything, just let go. But, but. So they sit here and say, come on, let go. Let go. How many times do I have to tell you, let go? And of course, that's not letting go, that's doing letting go. This is letting go of doing. Just being here. There's many, many tricks which we'll teach in the next few days on how to let go and relax to the max. And in fact, that was one of the wonderful moments when I was in Korea at a big meeting, I think in September, October. Was it September or was it October, you remember? Right about that time.
About then.
Yeah, about then. Yeah, give or take a year or two, you know, just let go, just is close
year.
Enough.
Last
year, okay, different last year. You sure? So anyway, and then just with all these people just, you know, doing a little bit of meditation, going for that big walk in the demilitarized zone. And the very end, they asked me, a couple of last words, you know, to the audience, you know, saying goodbye before they take me back off to the airport to get a flight back here. And I said, yeah. So the last words, I said, let go. And the translator, you know, said, translate, but no, don't just say let go. You have to give it the just the emotional context as well. Let go. So she said that in Korean, and everyone sort of laughed. And said, now, tell everybody in the audience, now you have to repeat it in English after me. It's not that hard to repeat let go in English. So I had all these 6,000 Koreans. Let go. And then I said to them, next one is, relax. So say, actually, it wasn't letting go, I told them to relax. Relax. So they described what it meant in Korean, and then everyone, relax. So can you do that as well? Come on. Relax. And then, to the max. To the max. So take it together now. Relax. To the max. Bye-bye. And then I left her with that. So look at that, they got it. They could actually feel just a bit of peace and happiness. It was just a great shame that Kim Jong-un wasn't there. If I could teach Kim Jong-un to relax. But anyway, back to serious stuff. So, easy to say, but hard to really get your head around this learning how to be and let things develop by themselves. So in order to do that, when people kept asking, well, how do we relax? How do we let go? So you know how to strive and get things done, but you know how just to let things all go pear-shaped. Let things all just see what happens, fix it up by itself. Do you know how to do that? Not having any fear, no fear of consequences, fear of what people say about you, fear whatever, just to let it be. And you find that you had nothing to be afraid of after all. Things go pretty well when you don't get involved, especially in meditation. Many people say, no, that can't be right. But we're now going to prove that to you the next 7 or 8, 9 days. So what we're going to do is, when we do a body sweeping, you can actually, I was saying last night, you can feel where your body gets tense and how it relaxes. You can imagine a guitar string. Guitar string, when it's pulled on both ends, when it's taut, tension, you will find that something hits it, bing. And when it's very loose, something hits it, boom. It's got a low tone. And when it's got no tension on it at all, you hit it, no sound, because it's not tense at all. And you can understand from this why there's so much anger and irritation, bad speech, and even escaping into fantasies and stuff, why it is that people just have no resilience anymore, or very little resilience. They're so tight, like a guitar string, pulled on both ends, bing! The slightest thing makes them react. But as a monk, we learn how to be so cool when something hits us. Oh, come on! He smiled, first of all. No! Sort of reaction. Shall I try again? I didn't prepare it, it's false. But anyway, it was only messing around. You find out that when you really relax, the whole body becomes so at ease that something hits it like a virus, like a wound, like a disappointment, and it doesn't have a reaction. Simply because it's not tight anymore. Or the other example of that is the whole story of kids, little babies, falling from balconies four stories up. And they don't get injured. Now, I don't want you to try this when you get home. But I've never seen that, thank goodness. But I've heard about it, read about it, seen photos of it. Why does that happen? Because they're just so relaxed. When they're so relaxed, of course, they don't tense up and they've got natural sort of resilience to them. So, these are metaphors of if we could only relax our body, just like a baby can. And that's the other simile. I've seen kids in shopping centres, and the kids are being held in their mother's arms, and she's got something else in her arms, some shopping trolley or whatever, and just with bustling people over there, and the kid falls fast asleep in his mother's arms. The child trusts the mother so much, it can really let go. Let go so it can fall asleep. If Venerable Posada carried me in his arms through a shopping centre, I'd be terrified. If you could actually hold it on for long enough, if you're strong enough. But you can get the point there. It's like the fear creates the tightness and tension, which stops us learning how to let go. So little by little, when we're meditating, first of all, this is a very safe place. People here keep precepts. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to come in here, or you get sent out. So you can feel you can trust the people, you're staying with when you're here. And number two, it's a comfortable environment. And number three, you've got a good teacher, I hope. So it means that I know what I'm talking about, done this many times, learning just how to, first of all, relax your body. Because this is one of the times we learn what letting go is. Feel ache, pain, tightness, tension, irritation, whatever it is in your body. As I was saying last night, we focus on it. Instead of trying to get rid of it, instead of trying to cure it, instead of trying to heal it, we embrace it. Allow it to be. Open the door of our heart to this feeling. Welcome it. See what happens. You can even try the opposite, the experiment. Okay, I don't like this. I'm going to try and think of something else, or go somewhere else, or trying to get rid of this. And you see what happens to that feeling. It gets tighter and tenser. And of course, at this point, I did flag this yesterday, the core teaching, the monster in the Emperor's Palace. How many of you haven't heard that story before? Monster in the Emperor's Palace. You all heard that story? Have not heard it. You've heard it before? Okay, you heard it just on Tuesday. And very quickly, then, an emperor was away. This monster came in to the palace while the emperor was away. And when the monster came into the palace, it was so frightening, everyone else got so scared that the security didn't do their job. Soldiers hid. Even ministers, was too scared to intervene. And that allowed the monster to go right through into the central part of the palace and sit on the emperor's throne. This is similar to all those negative things which happen in your life. They go right inside of you, to your throne, to your body, even into your mind. The cancers, the viruses, the difficulties. It's like a monster, a demon, which many people fight monsters or confront monsters, but you got the monster there, what do? You fight that monster, you confront that monster, you say, monster, get out of here, you don't belong, and try and find various ways of eradicating monsters. But in this story, the monster grew bigger and bigger, more violent, more smelly, more angry, just more of a problem. And so what happened? The emperor came back. Now, I'm usually pretty even with the gender of the emperor. The last time it was an empress. So this time it's an emperor. So the emperor sort of took one look at the monster, and instead of saying, get out of here, said, welcome. Thank you so much for coming to visit me. Oh, why didn't... Has anyone got you anything to drink yet? What would you like to eat? We've got one of the best cooks in the whole of all the retreat centers in Bianca. I'm sure she could knock up something for you very quickly, monster. Well, and they were really kind to the monster. I usually enjoy getting into this a bit more with getting pizzas and foot massages and stuff. But every act of kindness, the monster grew an inch smaller, less ugly, less smelly, less offensive. Because the emperor was welcoming the monster. Thank you for coming. The door of my palace is always open to you. How can I be kind and express my appreciation for you? And at that, the monster kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Until that monster became so tiny, one more act of kindness, and the monster vanished completely away. And it was based on a story in the Yaka Samyutta, or Devaputta Samyutta, in the Samyutta Nikaya. And the Buddha called that an anger-eating monster. And just that really struck me as a very, very wonderful psychological insight. Anger-eating monsters, which come into our lives, which come into our bodies. And every time we give them anger, get out of here, you don't belong. Look, I'm telling you, now, out, now, quick. And what happens is the monster gets bigger and more of a problem. So what we do is we learn how to welcome the monsters in our life. Thank you for coming to visit me. And that monster, you've got to do it with sincerity. The monster tends to get smaller and smaller and smaller. We don't fight monsters. We love them. Open the door of your heart to this tumor inside, to this ache, this pain, this disappointment in life. Open the door of your heart to it. Let it be. Let go of trying to get rid of it, trying to control it. When we say letting go, it's letting go trying to make it different. Letting be is letting it just sit here with you. and be a friend. So when we do this, you think, ah, that can't work. Try it out. So you're coming here, not sure why you're here for. I don't really care. You know what your reasons are. Maybe your husband sent you here for training. Whatever it is, you're evil, I don't know, or you're sick, or you had troubles, or whatever. But what you do learn here is actually to learn to understand and be. Learn, and you find the problem is not what you experience, but how you experience it, how you react to it. So this is where we learn how to let things go. If it's emotional, mental, so in the mind, so many people just are not used to this. So it gets very confusing. They tend to have a dialogue thinking about it and going all sorts of crazy stuff about it. But here, we start with our body. We feel it. And what makes it worse? What makes it better? Little by little. And it's incredible what you can do with this. As I was saying last night, just how you can actually realize the tightness, the tension. You can let it be and let it go. And it's amazing the sort of stuff which happens. Now, of course, this is not just to heal people physically, because there's much more to it than that. When you learn how to let go of the tightness and tension in your own body, you can actually take that further, as I was saying last night, to peaceometer, to let go of the tightness and tension in your mind as well. So this is actually where we learn the first stages of what letting go means. When you really let it go, the body becomes at peace. And you can actually feel that. You can actually know it for yourself. It's a physical feeling, and we know physical feelings much better than even our emotional states. But once we get into the physical feeling stuff and learn how to relax, let things go, then actually we're learning some Dhamma, some teachings, just by ourselves, by our own experience. And at the very, very least, you have a much healthier body. A body which is not run on fear, which is run on your personal understanding of your own body, which is obviously going to be different than anybody else's. And number two, then you learn how just to relax your mind and make it peaceful. You learn how to take away the tension in your mind. So you're loosening the strings until your body is just so loose. Your mind is just so loose, relaxed. It's really peaceful. Then people say, well, so what? You just go to sleep. No. You may have some sleepiness at the beginning, but all that is just the mind just recognizing, or the body recognize it's been pushing itself too hard, the mind has been thinking too much, and the poor body and mind are tired. It's a natural response to tiredness, to be sleepy. There is another type of problem we call like boredom or sloth and torpor. That is nothing to do with physical tiredness or mental exhaustion. This is only to do with the fact that we have got no energy in our mind, and because of that, we just nothing to satisfy us. It's just another search for contentment, for fulfillment, when we don't know where that contentment and fulfillment really lies. Now, one of the things with the sweeping meditation you will find, and hopefully you get this, is when you relax the body, after a while, it does become really comfortable, really peaceful. My body gets... I don't know when I used to go, the last time I had a bath, you know, in a tub, you know, it wasn't an indulgence, because I just walked to the top of Tiger's Nest in Bhutan and back down again. And of course, you know, that's quite a long hike. And the worst part of it is because it's very high altitude, so there's, you know, not much oxygen up there, literally. And so it was a tough hike back, and so I thought, well, you know, my legs might be a bit tired, this is a good excuse to have a bath and have a soak. Actually, my legs were actually quite fine, but I still use it as a nice excuse. Have a And monks don't have baths, and you have showers, obviously, and just to be able to go into a tub and just relax. Have you ever done that, relaxing in a tub? How does your body feel afterwards? Really good. It feels pleasurable, delightful. The whole body just relaxes in the hot water. Now, you don't, one of the reasons you don't go in the tub, because you don't need to, because you can do that whenever you want. In meditation, sitting here and just relaxing everything until your legs and your bottom, your back, everything feels just as it's had a nice soak in a hot bath. That feels good. It's a delight of relaxation. It's one of the reasons why people do go to spas, why they do go to the beach and lay back on a recliner. Every year, the Singapore Buddhist Fellowship do an executive retreat, which they get people to go to these usually five-star hotels in the down season in places like Thailand, Phuket, or somewhere. The next one is in Phuket. The last time I went there to teach, they said, oh, you know, you're a monk, you're a chowkorn, we'll give you the best suite in the house, which was with the ocean views. I said, oh, you're wasting it on me. He said, no, out of respect. So I went into the room there, and you could see the ocean just through there, but not just the ocean, all these scantily clad people messing around. So I just closed the curtains, and that's the last time I had the ocean view for the rest of the 9 days. It's a waste. On a mug. But you don't need that to relax. Just sit there and just don't need to go to have a spa and a massage and stuff. Just need to sit here and learn how to relax your own body. It feels good. And it does feel good. It's delightful. It's pleasurable, which is why people spend a lot of money on those things. So, here, you get that delight yourself. Why are people afraid of the delight which comes from relaxation and letting go? Because you find when you indulge in that delight of letting go, you focus on it, it's your object of meditation, your body relaxes even deeper. Body gets very, very peaceful and beautiful. Now the same thing happens later on with your mind, as Noah will teach here. You're watching the mind, it gets very peaceful. Peace of mind is very pleasurable. Nothing to worry about. Everything just relaxed. The past, you can't finish the past. You just, what's done is finished. You let it go. The future, now is where the future is being made. So let the future look after itself. You are now going to just be in this present moment. Life is so simple. You're just being here. Enjoy this moment. Now some people say, it's all right for Ajahn Brahm to say that, he's got no problems, ha 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 ha. You just come to a committee meeting, and see us talking to the monks, see us talking to the nuns, see us all has so many problems in this world. But, when I meditate, let that world go. In this moment, it's pretty good. So I'm just being here. And when you're being here, and it's delightful, I never turn away from that delight. Because that delight, we call it in Buddhism the piti sukha, the joy and happiness which we use as an object to get deeper and deeper into meditation. For those of you who know your suttas, the Samanyapada Sutta, the second teaching of the Buddha, the second sutta in the Digha Nikaya, it's all about how this path creates greater and greater sense of happiness, delight, joy, gets more and more and more and more. It was the new king of Magadha, King Ajatasattu, when he asked the Buddha, what are you doing this for? You know, you could be just living like me in a palace with whatever food you want, whatever entertainment you want. And that's when the Buddha said, you don't know what happiness is, King. This is much more delightful. Delights of peace, delight of lack of remorse, living a really good life, the delight of letting go of fear and worry, all those delights, especially the delights of a peaceful body, a body you can let go of and go into the world of the mind. There's so many much pleasures here that many people in the world don't even know about. So this is actually what we're going. So this is one of the reasons why then when we learn how to let go, it surprises us that it's a positive outcome. It's not being slack, it's not being heedless, it's not being irresponsible. It's actually being something really amazing. Just how peace, happiness, health just come. So this is actually where we learn about how to let go. So I did mention to you that I would give a guided meditation about letting go. And I know there's a few people seem to be getting a bit tired. And it's probably because of still maybe a bit hot for people. Because, okay, who knows? Who's supposed to be in charge of the aircon? Did you are. Okay, so what temperature is it at now? 23, okay, do you want to set it on there now? So, because again, people who come to meditate, that was one of the reasons I remember reading in the Visuddhimagga, that's a good time if you're cold to put the heater on, if you're hot to put some cooler on. So people can actually have a nice, and if it's too hot for you here, later on you can always meditate under your shower. Or in a cool place, if it's too cold, you can always get sort of a blanket around you or whatever. So try and find the best for you. So here we go. Trying to get in comfortable for you. This is supposed to be a hot day today. So it's about 15 minutes guided meditation. But if you do have the aircon on, for goodness sake, close the door. Otherwise we're wasting stuff. Very good. Even the side doors might as well close those, yeah. And is the side door there? Very good. There's a reason why I asked for the aircon on, and I'll let you know that later on. With all the struggles which I had with Sloth and Torpor as a young monk, and just how a simple solution solved it. So you're sitting here, and you try to get your body in a reasonably comfortable position. It's only going to be a short 15-minute meditation. Guided. Are you comfortable? When you ask a question of your body, it's one of the most effective ways of becoming mindful of your body. You ask the question. Ask the question, feet, how are you? How are you, feet? Are you comfortable? And you ask a question and you pause long enough to listen for an answer. You don't provide an answer to your feet. You feel okay, don't you, feet? Yeah, come on. No, you're silent enough to listen. Listen to the feelings and sensations in that part of your body, your feet, and get to know them. Ajahn Chah used to say, us Westerners had stupid feet. We thought it was a weird way of looking at a foot to call a foot stupid. The reason he said that, because walking barefoot on arms around, we'd always cut our feet and stub them, and our feet were full of bandages and band-aids. He said, Thai monks didn't have that, because you Westerners, you got very clever heads, but very stupid feet. So, ask your feet, can I improve your comfort? Can you feel any pressure on your feet anywhere? Is it possible to relieve that so the feet aren't squashed? My feet were. That's much better. When I said much better, I got feedback. Then get to your calves. How do they feel? You can move them, but sometimes you may have an injury. An ache may have pulled a muscle or something. So sorts of aches and pains, they don't really go away by adjusting your posture. So you can just focus on them. Zoom in is another word for focusing. Just like you zoom in using your computer. Zoom in on it. And feel it without fear. Feel the ache, the pain, the injury. Not with fear, not trying to get rid of it or change it, but getting to know and understand it. What is that feeling? What does it feel like? Really get to know it. I'm going to go further on that in a moment, but you go to your knees. A lot of people have knee injuries. Accidents, slips and falls, sport, riding motorbikes. How do your knees feel? If there is a problem there, just stay there, focus on it, get to know that feeling. And go to your thighs. Your butt. Make sure you get to know these different parts of your body. I'm going quite fast because I want to focus on the place where most people have problems and troubles, in the torso. So go up to your torso. So many what we call vital organs there. Now it can be your liver, your kidneys, your spleen. Could be your digestive tract, your stomach, your heart, your arteries. What's for, actually it's not just females, males as well. Rare, more rare, but cancers in the breast. How does it feel in that part of the body? You may have already had these things diagnosed. We can feel them before even the doctor does. Is there anything in your torso, from your neck down, from your buttocks up, which doesn't feel right? It could be an irritation because of so many people have irritable bowel syndrome. Just way too tense in life. Can you feel anything there? Anywhere in your body? In your torso? If you can, just focus on it. Focus on it to the exclusion of everything else. It's important. Sometimes this is life and death. And once you can focus and feel it, that becomes the object of your meditation. is important. It's right in front of you. It's vital in the true sense of that word. Feel it. And take time getting to know that irritation, that pain, that throb, that heaviness. You know that something is there. And you find just by giving attention to it without fear, but with kindness, it's like the emperor or the empress regarded the monster who come in to her palace. An ache, a pain, a heaviness, a tumour, or irritable bowel, or inflammation, whatever it happens to be. Welcome. Thank you for coming to visit me. We regard it with compassion, with kindness. If it really is compassion and kindness, letting it be, opening the door of your heart, no matter what it is, you will notice the feedback of that irritation, that ache, that pain, getting a little bit less intense. You can feel it relaxing. If this isn't working, then trial and error, try something else, another attitude. This moment is where my future is being made. So just be in this moment, letting go of all burdens of past or future. Letting it be. See if that eases off the problem. The thing with mindfulness and noticing the feedback, how the experience changes, allows you to experiment until you find out what works. It's very much like a child learns how to walk, how you learned how to lift your arm and grasp things. You fell down many times. That gave you feedback. But then you could stand and walk. That was a reward. You learned. Learning is being mindful, experimenting, not being afraid of falling over until one learns. So we learn about our own body, understand her, especially knowing how to relax things. And it is not just about health. You're learning mindfulness, what I called adding kindness to make it kindfulness. So kindness is another word for letting it be, appreciating it for what it is, not stigmatizing or demeaning the experience in this moment, valuing this moment, even if it's painful, valuing it and learning from it, until we know this body so well. Take any part of it, relax it. Bring it to a state of peace and happiness. So hopefully that you've been focusing on a part of the body which is irritating or painful. Not just enduring and gritting your teeth, but using wisdom, the wisdom of kindness, to learn just how that relaxes the body. If you do get into a relaxed state of body, know how pleasurable it feels. It is just like having soaked in a hot bath. Often I just go through my whole body and find, is there anything there which I can relax a bit more? Until your whole body is just so at ease, so loose, so relaxed. It feels so delightful. So delightful, you don't go to sleep and dull out because it's just too nice, too relaxing, pleasurable to go to sleep at this point. The delightful, relaxed, and healthy body. All come from being mindful and learning how to let this feeling be and let go of the fear which wants to change things. Okay, so in a few moments we'll be finishing this meditation. I'll just be quiet for maybe 10 or 15 seconds and then I'll start ringing the gong. Hopefully that was useful for you, and don't go and giving yourself grades A, B, C, D, E, F or whatever. This is how we learn little by little about how to be mindful with our body and how to interact with them. And that's the start of our meditation practice. And I was asked to spend at least 10 minutes, which is what I have now, because sometimes people have come to a retreat like this and they haven't had much exposure to meditation before, so that many of you apparently don't know what walking meditation is. How many people know how to walk? Of course you know how to walk. So what you do with walking meditation, we've got these three rooms, there, 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 with beautiful red carpets, just to make it so that it's attractive for you. And you start at one end. You don't start in the corners. The reason the red carpets are here is that sometimes people can be just so into themselves, they decide they need to have a long walk. So they start in one corner and go diagonally to the other corner, which means no one else can walk in that room at all. So what we did, we undeliberately, that the floor is really rough and uneven concrete, except for the mats, which are nice and smooth and comfortable. So it just actually gets people to actually to walk along the on the carpets. So it's a bit of sort of psychologically training you to walk on the most comfortable parts, which is the red carpet there. If you don't like those red carpets, there's plenty of other places you can do walking meditation in this compound. As long as you don't sort of interact with other people, interfere with other people. But these are the best places. And you start at the beginning. This is a great place to start. So you stand there. You put your gaze about a body length ahead of you. With your eyes open, not looking to the left, not looking to the right, just in front of you, head down, with your eyes open, couple of meters I mean, not that big, but a body length in front of you. The reason you do that is so it gives you the sense of safety and security. You're not going to tread on something and injure yourself. And also you see the wall coming up before you hit the wall, so you can stop at the right time. And you just walk. Walk at a natural pace. It doesn't need to be too fast or too slow, as what's comfortable for you. But you become aware in this present moment. It's not a time for contemplating the meaning of life or your biography, which you will write at the end of this retreat, or anything else you're trying to do in your life. It's again present moment awareness, just being here and feeling what it's like to walk. So, what's it like? Even don't lift your eye, no, look at me. Now, lift up your left leg. If you can't lift it up, just move your feet. Without looking at it, feel it. What does it feel like to move your feet or lift up your leg? You're becoming aware of body movements. Now, see if you can like lift up or move the feet and your right leg. What does that feel like? So you're focusing your mindfulness, your awareness, just on your feet and legs. So when you start the walking meditation, you look down about body length in front of you, and then you feel the legs, or one leg rather, start to move. You start walking, just one step at a time. So as you say, you can lift up your right leg first of all as you start the walking. What part of your foot leaves the ground first? As you walk, you don't force it. You just start to notice your natural walking pace. What leaves the ground first? What leaves it last? And how does it feel that just when the right leg starts to lift up, does it go up straight up? Or does it sort of go to, my one goes backwards a little bit. And then you feel it moving forward. So a lot of muscle movements have to be completed just for one little step. Then the foot comes down. See if you can notice what part of the foot meets the ground first, what meets it last. And that's just with one step. So what you're doing is you're putting your mindfulness, your attention, just on the process of walking. And it's not thinking about the meaning of life or dependent origination or Four Noble Truths or anything like that. It's all about learning about your own body and how to walk, what happens when you walk, and you get into this present moment, a very simple object to focus on, and also a very delightful, peaceful object to focus on, just how you walk. You're mindful and you're kind, just being in this moment. And just observing. And after one step, the other foot moves, and you get to the end of the walking path, realizing the end of the path, then you turn around. And how many different parts of the body have to move just to turn around? Not just the legs, but the waist, obviously the buttocks. Everything else just turns as you're turning around. And when you're finished, then you start walking again. And sometimes people say, well, this is just, must be so boring. But my goodness, it's not boring at all, because you're in this moment, you're mindful, there's so much to watch, and it's very refined watching. So after a while, you get so peaceful. And the reason why we do the walking meditation as well as a sitting meditation is because your body gets very stiff and achy if you just sit here all the time. So when you're not sitting meditation, you do walking meditation. It's so close. So you see many people, they sit here when their legs get a bit tight, tired or whatever, then they go in there and do some walking meditation. How long for? How long do you sit for? How long do you spend eating or sleeping? It's however much you need. Whatever you feel is appropriate. So you do some walking meditation. Now, on this retreat, of course, you know, the first day again you'll be tired. If you don't want to do walking meditation or sleeping I already gave it away, didn't I? Meditation has become so popular that in the last 12 months that even somebody sent me a cartoon of Garfield. He tried meditation, but he said when he tried meditation he became too tense. So he decides to do his version of meditation called Beditation. And he says he can sleep for 6 or 7 hours and he feels so relaxed afterwards. That's Garfield's meditation. But if you really are tired the first few days, then you can do some laying down meditation. But if you do laying down meditation, then make sure that you do a little bit of a body sweeping when you lay down before you go fast asleep. Feel the body relax it. Because you know, a lot of people don't know how to even to sleep these days. Which is why people have sleep deficits, have insomnia, narcolepsy, they have just waking up in the middle of the night. Even, I'm not sure if I should say this, but over in Margaret River, you know, it's the wine region, and the people in Margaret River, they managed to concoct this new therapeutic wine. Only for old people who have a trouble sort of sleeping through the night because they have to get up to go to the toilet in the middle of the night. And so it's based on the type of wine, I don't know wine, obviously, thank goodness. The two types of wine, was it Pinot Blanc and Pinot Noir? You've heard about that wine before? I know a lot of people know, sometimes I'd say trick questions, I'm looking at your hair, you're breaking your precepts. No, it's called, instead of called Pinot Blanc or Pinot Noir, it's called Pinot Mor. It's a joke. Come on, Pinot Mor. So anyhow, so sometimes people find it hard sleeping at night if you do have to get up in the middle of the night, they don't know how to go to sleep again. So you learn how to relax your body, be aware of the body, be kind to it, let it be. You know, sometimes, it was about a year ago, quite a few years ago now. I don't know why, but you know, I wasn't sleeping that well at night time. And then I found out that when you really try to sleep, I've got to get up in the morning, I've got to give a talk tomorrow morning, I'm teaching a retreat, I'm overseas, rah, rah, rah. The harder I try to fall asleep, of course, the more that sleep evaded me. So, you know, I have to do something different than this. So instead I thought, hey, why is it that I want to go to sleep? Because my bed is one of the most comfortable parts of my life. Laying back on your bed, you and your favorite pillow, snuggling into your favorite pillow, just relaxing, putting your feet out. When I'm in my cave on my mattress, I don't have to give a talk. No one asks me any questions. Nobody's taking a photograph of me or asking me to sign a book. Ah, it's so free and relaxing. I thought, hey, why do I want to waste this experience? The most comfortable time of my life, relaxing in my bed, I don't want to go to sleep. And that was the last thing I remembered when I woke up in the morning. I think you can understand what's going on. We want to go to sleep. That tightness, that tension, that wanting, that stops us relaxing. So instead I decided I'm going to enjoy the beautiful, comfortable, delightful feeling of being relaxed. Relax to the max. Then you go to sleep. in that posture. So if you need to go to sleep, just, with such busy lives, we can't waste time in our life. We've got to be productive. So you're going to sleep, give everything you've got, really get in there, really go to sleep. Yeah. And this is actually how you learn about your body and your mind and how to relax. So if you do need to do the sleeping posture, fine. First couple of days, take it easy. Last little story before we finish off for the morning. That this retreat, quite a few things happened on this retreat I once gave over in Sydney. And this particular case was a woman who came late. She was an executive. The reason she came late about midnight, apparently, was because trying to finish off all the loose ends. You know that you can't finish off loose ends. There's always loose ends. You know, throughout your whole life, there's always things you'll never finish off, even when you die. So anyway, don't worry about that. So, and the people are always, there's stupid things, there's bucket lists of things they need to do before they die. As for me, that's where we get the word for kick the bucket. Get rid of all those bucket lists. So anyway, when she came, she had so many loose ends, but she couldn't finish them all off. And the first talk which she heard from me, like this one, learning how to relax and let go. Make your own schedule. And so she went straight back to bed. She got up in time for lunch. After lunch, she went back to bed again. In the evening, she came out for the talk. And after the talk, had an early night. And she carried on that for two or three days. Now, for her, they were living in a dormitory. So it was like sharing a room with about three other women. And she came up to me and said, every time, and they're not supposed to speak, but every time I look at those ladies, wow, they just give me like the evil eye. Like, you know, you're not really one of us. You're not really meditating. You're just sleeping all day. And I said, no. You know, you're my hero. You carry on. They're not angry at you. They're just jealous. They wish they had the guts to do the same. And she was an amazing meditator. First 3 days, she slept most of the time. The next 3 days, because her body was relaxed, she caught up on her sleep deficit. The next 3 days, she was meditating, she caught up with everybody else. But the best part, the last 3 days of that retreat, she was way ahead of everyone. Star meditator. And because she looked after her body with kindness, first of all, she hadn't tried to be an enemy of her body and train it and make it like this. She learned from her body, it needed relax. She was an executive, stressed out to the max. So she learned how to relax the body. And then once you had enough relax, you know if you slept too much, you get very, very dull. It doesn't feel nice, but if you haven't slept enough, you try and push it. You're just pushing against a brick wall. Have you ever hit your head against a brick wall? You never break through. You just get a sore head. Which is stronger, a wall or your head? So anyway, so people are really dumb. And hitting your head doesn't make you wiser, it just gives you more brain damage. So anyway, to put it bluntly. So after a while, we just learned how to work with our body. And after a while, we just soon catch up, and our body feels really good. It feels really nice, and we come in here, and we actually want to meditate. We actually look forward to sitting down. It's not that, oh yeah, I'm Ajahn Brahm's attendant, I better get up here and just fly the flag and just be a good attendant monk. Ajahn Brahm, you know, oh crikey, I'm just well known. I've got to make sure that I sit all the hours to make people impressed and I've been there, done that. So if you're tired, take a rest. Be kind, be sensitive, get to know your body and what it needs. And then sooner comes the time, you come in here, you like to sit, the body wants to sit. You're sitting here and have a wonderful time together. Get very, very deep in meditation. Because you looked after your body. The Buddha called it the middle way.
find it out for yourself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. That's not good enough. Come on, give it some real. Oh, so try again. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you. Very good. Okay.